This meeting is now being recorded.
I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM Centene for Trademark Data Review Call on the 27th of February, 2019. It's 1700 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. If you happen to be only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. And hearing no names, I would like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll hand the meeting back over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Michelle. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. And just to quickly run through the agenda, the first item will be statements of interest. Item two, to review the previously collected data source documents against the claims charter questions 1 through 5. And there are two sub-items there, 2.1 and 2.2. But we'll just note that for efficiency, we'll take each of those data sources against each question rather than repeating the questions for each of those items. So for instance, we'll look at charter question 1 and whether or not the source at agenda item 2.1 helps to answer that question, or the source at 2.2 helps to answer that question, and thereby going through each of the questions against each of the data sources to avoid duplication. And then the third agenda item is to review the additional data sources against also the claims charter questions 1 through 5. And Kathy's asking 2.1 and 2.2. These are actually the sub headers or sub items underneath agenda item 2. So if you look at the agenda in the top pod, 2.1 is the ICANN org maintain list of registry operators, et cetera, that source data. And 2.2 is the data subteam meeting with John Nevitt and that data. Thank you. And then any other business. And in any other business, we'll remind people what are the upcoming meetings, and that there is no meeting next week of the subteam, as you may have seen in an email that went out earlier today. And we'll also walk very briefly through the schedule for ICANN 64 for the subteam meeting and working group meetings. Thank you. And Kathy, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, I have a question. This is Kathy Kleiman. Hi, everyone. It has to do with number 3 on the agenda, review the following additional data sources against the claims charter questions 1 to 5. And because I'm both Sunrise and Trademark Claims, I noticed that some documents on the Sunrise list of additional data may be of great relevance to what we're doing. It just so happened that the person, I think I'm going to speculate since we can't get in someone else's head, but that the person who was filling in the questions was only on the Sunrise subteam and didn't realize the relevance of some of the additional data to the trademark claims. So I just wanted to see if when we're talking about additional data and that in the additional data question, whether we can refer also to data submitted that appears on the Sunrise list. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And before I go to George Kirkos, I'd like to call on my colleague Ariel Liang to help answer your question, Kathy, please. Ariel.
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel from staff. So the two documents for the additional link submitted data, one is for trademark claims, the other is for Sunrise. And the way staff separating the submitted data is based on what the submitter said in terms of what charter question their data is relevant to. And if you recall, in the Google form, we did ask them to indicate what charter question, whether Sunrise or claims, their data is relevant. And then they provided that information. So we, for the convenience and efficiency of the review, we separated these data into two Google Docs and based on that information. So it's purely based on what is written by the working group members.
Right, but Ariel, may I follow up? So Zach Moskowitz, who is he on this as well? I don't know. Oh, there he is. But there's a great article that says, is the Trademark Clearinghouse causing new GTLDs to lose 6 times the number of registrations in the domains from 2015. Very relevant to what we're talking about, even though Zach only pointed out the Sunrise question. So as long as we're looking at additional data, may I posit that if we have the time, and even if we don't, it's something we can do online when the tables reopen, which I assume we will, but that this additional data may serve both subteams. Thanks.
And thank you, Kathy. And George, I do see your hand up, but I just, this is Julie Hedlund from staff. I just wanted to make a note that while the documents will open after this call, they'll be open only briefly, open only until COB today, Eastern Standard Time. The reason for that is that staff will need to complete the summary tables, that is the summary report of all of the analysis of not only additional data, but all of the data, but including the additional data. So, and those summary reports will need to go to the subteam co-chairs to review by this Friday, and so that they can then go to the subteams to review. So there really won't be time for much additional analysis or discussion. So while we recognize that there may be some things that people will want to add to the forms following today's call, there will just be a brief time to be able to do so. Just wanted to make that note. And George Kirikos, over to you.
George Kirikos here. If we're going to reopen the process for submitting data, then I'd obviously want to the opportunity to submit those 40 or 50 additional documents that I had posted to the RPM PDP mailing list, but didn't have enough time to fit into the Google form. Thanks.
Thank you, George. And really just noting again, this is Julie Hedlund from staff, that the idea of opening the documents is if people had some comments during today's call that they thought were relevant, then they could add those comments after the call. So we're not in actuality reopening the process to another round of new data. I hope I haven't been unclear there, but we are actually trying to capture things that people might be saying today and might want to have to add, might wish to add based on today's meeting discussion. And thank you all. And at this point, I'd like to turn things over to Martin to get started on agenda item 2. Thank you.
Very much, Julie. This is Martin Silva for the record. I hope you're all feeling okay. If something's wrong, just let me know. We're going to review now the services, the 2.1 in the agenda and 2.2, which are the ICANN augment list of registry operators and relevant dates for Sunrise, trademark claims, and other public program periods, and the data subteam meeting with the generated donuts at ICANN 61. The idea is to go through the current questions, the homework that we had, and see what we have there regarding those two sources. As I see, and you can correct me, in the chart of question 1, we don't have specific input for these data sources. I think we have some, we have anything. I cannot see any doing thing, and staff can correct me if I'm wrong. We only have the INTSO final report, but I think that's from last week. It's not a new comment. If it were, I think this is from George. If this is new comments from the INT survey, let us know. If it's just the feeling from the last week that you presented, then we should move to the charter question 2, unless someone else has any other opinion. Yeah, I imagine. Thank you, George, for clarification. Then let's go to question 2, where we do have some input, I think, for this time. Let's see. Yes, we also have input from previous week. And for this week, we have, George, you have a comment here from the ICANN 61 transcript meeting. Would you like to say a comment, or you're happy with what is there. George, you have a floor?
Yeah, George Rico. So the transcript, it's it speaks for itself. It's just there was some background data from Barry Cobb that mentioned that some TLDs had longer claim periods, but in itself, it didn't say what the effects of those longer claims period were. But so it's not that useful, but it does show that there was some differences in the length of the periods. Whether that has any effects or not, we'd have to dig deeper. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, George. Does anyone have anything to add in this part of the question too? Okay, if none, let's go see charter question 3. Here we have again material from last week that was put in, but no comments on the new sources we are reviewing now. If no one has anything to add to charter question 3, we can move to charter question 4. Again, we have comments from the previous week and nothing for this week. Please do step in at any moment if you have something to ask or any question. And we have the last one, which is in question 5. And here we also have a small comment from George. George, if you care to comment on this, your opportunity. If not, we already have the input in the spreadsheet. Go, George.
Sure, George Rico, for the transcript. It's basically the same comment as document number 2, just pointing out the background data from Barry Cobb, that some new TLDs had slightly different trademark claims periods. And what the effects of those are, we don't know. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you very much, George, for the verification of the comment. If no one has anything to add to these charity questions homework, remember this is for all previously collected data. And then we have to move to or item 3 in the agenda. That was very quick. And just to be sure, or be clear, when George, we are past question 4. We did all of them.
Hi, George Rikos again. I thought the comments we were already on Q5, but for Q3, I didn't have anything new. I thought my previous comments were related to turn to question 5.
You did last.
I thought we were.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Can you hear us, Martin?
Yes, perfectly.
Okay, we can hear you.
Okay, am I wrong or we already finished question 5?
I apologize, I thought we were on question 4, but...
Question 4 is pretty much empty as far as I see.
Right. Right, I think so.
It's question 5, where I asked George for extra input.
Okay.
George here. I had posted a new input for question 2, which was the Barry Cobb background data, and then
yeah.
I had nothing for question 3. I had nothing new for question 4, and I thought Martin went through those, but the slides were behind you, like you had already passed them. So then staff posted charter question 4, which we already covered. So,
okay, and I understood the comment. Okay, I didn't got the context of your comment on the chat. Okay, so let's go to item 3 in the agenda. Sorry for the confusion. Here we're going to review the additional data sources that were identified, and when staff said that the document was going to be open for a little more after the call, it was only for comments, not for additional sources. Now we have that on screen. I don't think we would do merit to time if I read everything that was written. I see the only one that made comments to this document is George. So just like before, George, if you want to or make it oral, if you want, you know, to explain to us what you found, what you think, go ahead. If not, we can still have the written part of you. And Kathy, if you found anything useful in the Sunrise document, please point it to us. Kathy, you have your hand up.
Sorry, are we going to be going through this one by one, like question one, question two, question three, question four? I note that Michael Karanikolas, who posted some of these, is not on the sub-team. So if we're going to speak to his data, we should probably, and it's, you know, it's been posted. I posted some, and Rebecca posted some. So, you know, the question is kind of what's the right order? Are we going question by question? Start with, you know, question one?
As long as this, yeah, I think you got it. This is Martin Silva for the record. As long as the commenter says what data entry he's referring to, we don't need a specific order to go through. This is only, we are not going to read aloud everything that was found. That's
okay.
Already clear that if you have anything specific to comment on your data sources or like George that put it on Britain, please go ahead.
Yes, I do. Can I go ahead?
Yes.
It's actually the article I was referring to, which I thought was Zach and the Sunrise, appears to have been posted by Michael to Art. So if we're looking at 1B, which is, you know, claims charter question one is the trademark claim service having its intended effect? And B is the trademark claim service having any unintended consequences? And what we see here in the additional data, particularly this first one by Michael Karnikolas is, no, I apologize, the second one that he posted, which is something in the domains called how common words like pizza, money, and shopping ended up in the trademark clearinghouse for new GTLDs. And Michael tells us in that first column, I mean, he types out a long list of dictionary words protected in the TMCH. And I won't read them to you, but, you know, let's just start with, you know, the first two lines, active adventure, auto, balance, bank, best, bet, bicycling, and bliss. And, you know, it's, you know, so these aren't globally famous marks, you know, by any means. And so the idea is the trademark service having its intended effect? If it were things like Verizon, I think it would be one thing, but these common ordinary dictionary words, I think means it's not having its intended effect, that we are unintendedly turning away good faith registrants. That's not my conclusion. That's the author's. The reporter says, unfortunately, the actions of both the well-meaning and the well-meaning, I think he means trademark clearinghouse registrants and the gamers, those who are registering to game, will affect the everyday Joe looking to register a domain name. So I think this is really important for question 1B. Question for staff is how are we including this in the additional data, in the charts that everyone will be looking at or that will be compiled by staff? Thanks.
Is this the question for staff? Julia, is your hand up?
Hi, yes. Well, first of all, Kathy, thank you. This is Julie Hubman from staff. Thank you for the question, but also thank you for the comments. If you do have something that you wish to add, noting how this particular data is useful in answering one of the charter questions, the document will be open briefly, as we said earlier, after this call if you wanted to enter in that comment. Any comments that go into this document will then be summarized in the summary table. So, and it also any of the, you know, discussions here, but ideally what people are saying here on this call hopefully is also something that they have captured in the Google Docs. So we would urge you then to, if you have something to add it when we reopen the document. Then I'll stop there and turn things back to Martin. Thank you.
Thank you very much. George, you have your hand up. The phone's yours.
Yeah, George Krikos for the transcript. Yeah, I thought the homework assignment for this week was that, at least for this segment, was that people were supposed to read the link and the data that was submitted by the individual member and then either agree or disagree with it. So I'm the only one that actually spelled out the third column. Do people, you know, have no comment either way, that they don't agree with it or they don't, or they actually disagree with it, or, you know, there's no good reason for that third column to be, you know, blank for everybody. If they did the homework, they would have either agreed or they would have disagreed. To have no comment means isn't really an option. and as for the order of this, are we going to go through this document by document? Or because Kathy said you want to go through it question by question, that seemed to be different than the way this document is organized. I obviously have my written comments, which speak for themselves. And on the second document, that on page 2, I point out that different charter questions than the ones that Michael identified could also be in play, like question 4B regarding expanded matches, and even question 2C. So I assume when staff is going to be reorganizing them, they're going to take those into account so that they're compiled into the appropriate questions. Thank you.
George, yes, if people find it more useful to go through each one of them, at least reading the title so that each one knows whether to comment now or later, we can do that. I have Greg, and after Greg, Caddy, and if you don't have a comment, I will read each title so we can point on specifically, okay, now we're going to comment on this first, that first. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks, it's Greg Chapman for the record, and I just wanted to follow up on the discussion of this item from Domain Name Wire. First, I would note that Domain Name Wire blog is definitely, you know, written with a point of view. So I don't know if I'd use the term a reporter, or if we use it, need to understand that there's definitely, you know, a point of view, and this is an opinion piece that is here. As you read through it, that's quite clear. Nonetheless, I would note that the author says that after spending a week analyzing the terms, reviewing the TMCH rules, and talking to people on many sides of the domain name ecosystem, I've come to this conclusion. For the most part, the common words were applied for by well-meaning companies that are only trying to protect their brands. A handful were registered by people trying to game the system. So it seems the, you know, the issue of quote unquote dictionary words and common words being trademarks is is an exact. And the, you know, the insinuation that these are, you know, by looking at this, that these, you know, shouldn't be in the TMCH or shouldn't be trademarks, doesn't hold water. Thanks.
Thank you, George, for your input. We have Patty Kleinman next. Patty?
Right. Thanks, Greg. Okay, so other so this article, according to Michael, also impacts question four of the claims. And sorry, I know we're jumping around here. I'm not quite sure how to do that. So is the exact match requirement serving the intended purposes? And the sense that Michael shares is that there is evidence, you know, and so one of the questions, you know, sorry, let me be clear. Claims charter question four, is the exact match requirement for trademark claims serving the intended purposes of the trademark claims RPM? A, what is the evidence of harm under the existing system? So Michael posits that the first two articles that he posts about these very, very common words that are in the trademark clearinghouse do create harm under the existing system. He says, I would call this clear evidence of abuse as it expands the applicability of trademark protections in the domain name space vastly beyond what is permitted under any domestic legal framework, and talks about, the use of dictionary words. He says Christ and luxury are in here as well, which is me. So anyway, I just wanted to point out the relevance of some of these articles to multiple questions. And I entered a transcript. It's on page 5, so it's farther down in this table, which people have control over. So I entered the transcript of our discussion in Copenhagen, which was fascinating, and had two members of the U.S. Trademark Office there raising questions and concerns, among other things, about the protection of marks, which could be trademarks or not trademarks, protected by statute or treaty, kind of where that came from in the rules, and also kind of huge implications because geographical indications are not considered trademarks by many, including by the World Intellectual Property Organization, European geographical indications. And so this transcript of the Copenhagen meeting has the U.S. Trademark Office, you know, coming to us, coming to the microphone, to the working group, and sharing their concerns about marks that in the United States are viewed as generic but appear to be in the trademark clearinghouse. We're talking about words like champagne and burgundy. So if you have a future.California, then the trademark clearinghouse might, but we can't see it, might have burgundy and champagne for the Europeans, but not the way it's used by the Californians. So just wanted to point out the relevance of that article to all of the trademark claims questions that we're evaluating. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. We all have Philip Cohen next in queue. Philip? We can't hear you, Philip, if you're talking. Meanwhile, I see also Mary Wong has her hand up. Mary, if you want to go while Philip starts out his phone.
Yeah, if you don't mind, and while Phil untangles his audio, so staff just wanted to comment on these points very generally, and it's kind of a structural problem when setting up the way work on these things. It seems quite clear that in this particular case, right, in terms of attempting to answer some of these claims questions, particularly is the claim service having any unintended consequences, there is or there may be a link to what happened with the trademark clearinghouse. Unfortunately, for this subteam, what we were supposed to look at is whether the data answers that specific claims question. And so it's a bit difficult now to deal with the linkage. So this could be something that is reported back to the full working group. And we noted that both subteams are due to report to the full working group during the first session at ICANN 64. How this subteam decides to handle that piece is really up to you, whether or not you get agreement on how to handle it. You could, for example, note for the working group that the data itself might show X, but there may be a link to a later discussion that we're coming back to, because a lot of what Michael and Kathy are specifically talking about has to do with the scope of the TMCH. It's hard to go further than that, perhaps here, given that we're looking at the claim service, but we do suggest noting it and perhaps having some kind of report or language that includes that so that the working group will know this and take that into account. Another reason why we suggest this, quite aside from the specific remit of this scheme, the other reason is that with the analysis group data from the first report, there were a lot of caveats around things like the abandonment rate. So when moving into the realm of conclusion based on data, that's always been a problem, and it seems like this is one of the things that this subteam is faced with. So our suggestion is to note it, report it, and then possibly the working group could consider that in a broader way when they talk about the trademark clearinghouse. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Philip, can you try now?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, apparently I had stepped away and my microphone didn't unmute when I stepped back in a little while ago. But again, Phil, for the record, speaking in a personal capacity, a few things I wanted to say. One, in regard to the threshold question, is the claim service having any unintended consequences, such as deterring good faith domain name applications? I believe we have pretty broad consensus that the answer to that is probably, but we don't know to what extent. We based on the data we have, we don't know if the non-completion rate for registrations that generate claims notices is due to deterrence of domain registrations that were intended to be used in good faith, the extent to which it deterred registrations where there was bad intent and intent to cyber squat. We don't know how many of those uncompleted registrations were done simply to try to find out if certain terms were in the clearinghouse database had been recorded. So we just don't know from the data we have. We've discussed this before. In regard to certain terms, certain generic words being in the database, while they, I know there's a dispute regarding whether Deloitte has been too expansive in terms of allowing geographic indicators to be recorded and words disclaimed but included in design marks. We don't know if the words Christ or luxury or other things were in that category. They're not geographic indicators, but we don't know if they came from a design mark. Or, you know, ICANN is dealing with a global trademark registration system with different national rules for getting a registration with different levels of examination, so it's kind of a lowest common denominator. That raises a policy issue. Should the criteria for getting in be tightened? We haven't seen a recommendation on that. I don't know of any evidence we've seen in regard to trademarks that Deloitte has not been doing the proper job that trademarks are getting in to the clearinghouse database, which don't meet the threshold criteria for recordation. Finally, on the 4B question, should the matching criteria for notices be expanded? Given the incompleteness of the data, I'm not sure that the data answers that either way. There may be members of the working group or the subteam who want to raise specific proposals for expansion, and we can address those when and if they're raised. But we're basically dealing with a set of data which doesn't answer these questions in any conclusive manner, in my personal opinion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philip. We have Kathy next in the queue.
Sorry, coming off mute. Okay, so I agree with Mary that we have an opportunity to report back to the full working group on data that is discussed here that might be useful for later discussions. But I do want to note that we did consider having that we have, there's a reason we did things in this order. We did talk about having three subteams at one point: trademark claims, Sunrise, and structure of the trademark clearinghouse. And it was suggested by members of the working group that we wait on the structure of the clearinghouse to see what the subteams report back as they look at the two mechanisms, the trademark claims and the Sunrise. So that's exactly what's happening, is we're finding that there are structural issues. And I would disagree with Phil, sorry, Phil, but that the rules were pretty clear when they were adopted by the GNSO Council of what should go into the trademark clearinghouse. One doesn't think you have to submit the rule itself as part of the data, the additional data, because it's the STI rule that was adopted by the council and by the board. But here, these articles, and I hadn't read these articles. These are fascinating articles that show us to what extent ordinary dictionary words, we had talked about it. An analysis group had given us kind of the top 10, of which I think 7 or 8 were very common words. But as they go on and on and on, it's looking like hundreds of dictionary words are now in the trademark clearinghouse, words like cloud for pen. And so as we look at the detail in these articles, and let's assume that these articles are opinion pieces, but that the facts, that these, you know, well-known reporters like Andrew Allman works very hard on his facts. And so even while there's an opinion piece that these facts that he's found that these words are registered, that something, he's getting a trademark claims notice. I don't know how he knows, or someone else has gotten a trademark claims notice. But we are seeing new data here, and I think it sheds light on the scope and the impact of the mechanisms, and it's very important data. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Martin Hill for the record. I see we have Rebecca Tashnet next on the queue. Rebecca?
Rebecca Tashnet, thank you. So I appreciate Mary explaining her reasoning better, I just want to note my strong disagreement. The content of what's in the TMCH affects what the claims notice does in the world. So we have to talk about what the claims notice is doing. And Phil has heard me say this before, but I got to say, I think it does make a difference in our evaluation if we know that a ton of the notices going out are going out for cloud and hotel. Like there is a theoretical chance that someone was going to cyber squat on the Swiss trademark owner of cloud for pens, but that's not where I'm going to place my money. So the content affects both the incidence of, you know, claims notices going out to people who we could plausibly think of are likely to be cyber squatters versus the proportion going out to people who actually, you know, on inspection, that's probably not what they're most likely to be doing, right? These are not notices going out for Verizon or even for Apple, though there may be those too, but we now know something, and that affects our evaluation of what the claims notices are likely to be doing in the world and the likelihood that they're having deterrent effects. So we absolutely should be considering that. And it may be that there are responses to that don't come in the claims notice, but those are the claims notices that are going out, and we need to deal with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. And we only have approximately 15 minutes left. So do remember, if you have any comments on this additional data, do it now, because we only have 15 minutes, and today we are wrapping that up. Just so we don't lose focus on the task we are going to finish today. Greg, you have the floor.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. At the risk of stating the obvious, many trademarks are words. Trademarks fall into categories that can roughly be described as suggestive, arbitrary, and fanciful. Fanciful meaning the ones that are made up, suggestive and arbitrary being the other ones, or they can be descriptive but with secondary meaning. So it's kind of a dog bites man story to find that there are trademarks that consist of words that are in the trademark clearinghouse. It's kind of like I'm shocked that there's gambling in this establishment. So that I think is kind of It's a fact clearly, but whether it's a shocking fact, I disagree. Nonetheless, you know, I think we've all recognized that the trademark clearinghouse, the claims notice may be overly intimidating and causing people to back away from, applications, to register domain names that they, you know, have no reason to do so. So I think the issue is there. Which, of course, this is the trademark claims notice, group. So if in fact there's a legitimate, trademark for cloud, then that's, you know, appropriate to be there. And if somebody's registering for cloud and has no reason to be concerned about the existing registration that shows up in the claims notice, it should be clear enough, that they should be able to go forward. And, you know, so we have a communication issue here more than anything else. And I hope we can come to, solving that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. We have George Kirikos.
George Berkowitz here. We're going off on a tangent, I guess. People are debating the issues rather than the article. What I would want to add to that tangent, though, is that the issue of proportionality is very important. If, as Rebecca pointed out, the top 10 notices were for terms like Facebook, Bloomberg, Google, Yahoo, Verizon, Exxon, that would have been compelling evidence that the balance was proper, that that it was kind of deterring registrations, registration attempts that were more compelling in terms of possible cyber squatting. If there were like 500,000 registration attempts for, you know, the term Google, for example, then that would be, you know, a sign of the success of the program. But when you have, in fact, that it's deterring registration attempts for, you know, hotel or one or cloud, that tends to see, make me, one think that, you know, the proportionality just isn't there. And so that perhaps it would argue for, you know, looking at the entire reasoning for the policy to begin with. But anyhow, I hope people will look at the five or six documents that were submitted, because we haven't really had anybody's input on, you know, for example, Christine Farley submitted a document which rewrote the trademark claims notice, which was kind of interesting. But I don't consider that a document. I consider that more of a proposal. And so people might want to weigh in on the various other documents that were submitted. Rebecca's article on running out of trademarks was obviously important as well. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Susan, you're next.
Yes, thanks. I am Susan Payne, and I'll be really quick, because I know this is sort of, again, talking about merits, but basically we've spent the call yet again talking about the merits rather than the specific documents. But I think one thing to bear in mind is, of course, that we're talking here about the claims notice, and the very first claims notice gets generated is a demonstration that the owner of whatever that trademark is who put it in the TMCH hasn't been using it to register during the sunrise or even afterwards extensively across, you know, all GTLDs that were available to them, you know, irrespective of what they were. And so in a way, my comment is partially going to Kathy's comment in the chat. You know, if they had been doing that, there wouldn't have been any claims notices generated because the domains would already be gone. And so actually this is, you know, this is demonstrating, that lots of these, yes, you know, there are these dictionary terms that have been put in the trademark clearinghouse, but the domains within the TLDs that relate to that term are still available for someone to register. And so, yeah, I think we come back around yet again to this conversation that we keep having, which is, we think that we do, you know, we do have a perception amongst this group that perhaps the wording of the claims notice is off-putting to some people, that either they don't understand it or they can't be bothered or they're scared off by it. And we keep talking about let's change the notice wording. Well, let's change the notice wording. That's all.
Thank you, Susan. Again, we have 10 more minutes. We have inputs from Michael Kanikolov, the NGT Elite Program, Rights of Genetic Mechanisms Review Draft Report. We have a comment from George there. If anyone wants to comment on any of these, just come through. Another one from Michael Kanikolov, how come awards like Pizza Money and Shopping end up in the General Cleaning House, which what sparked all this? Then we have Rebecca. Oh, Tashnet, are we running out of trademarks? Remember, you can stop me and we can comment on this if you want. Teddy Klayman, wipe of fact on geographical indications. We have Christine Foley, trademark claim subjects be right, which George Jones commented on that on the phone. And the last one is from Patty Clayman. Transcription icon of Copenhagen RPNs, which she also commented. Does any of you have any other comment on this? If not, we can go to any other business that can introduce us to the world head. We'll give a few seconds in case anyone wants to raise their hand or write something in the chat.
This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and Martin, I maybe lost a little bit of what you were saying at the end there, but were you turning things over to staff then to just finish up with respect to what we can be looking forward to in Kobe?
If no one else steps up to the comment, yes, you may. Actually, yes, you can. We waited a few seconds. Go ahead, Julie.
Thank you very much. I don't see any other hands up. And I just would like to, again, remind people that the Google Doc will be reopened, and it will be open until COB Eastern Standard Time today. And that is for you to enter comments as to whether or not you think COB Eastern Standard Time would be midnight today, actually. We're going to leave it open until midnight today. Thank you, Kathy. So and that would be that if you have any comments where you think that the data, additional data source is helpful in answering a charter question or is not helpful in answering a charter question, then please add those comments. We're not actually opening it up for new additional data sources. As we mentioned before, we do not have time for that. And so looking ahead, as you saw in the message earlier today, there are no sub-team calls next week because some people will be traveling to Kobe. And then the next meetings will be in Kobe. They will be on Sunday and Monday, the 10th and the 11th of March. The schedule has been sent to the list, and also the links to the various items on the schedule. And noting for this sub-team that in addition to making a providing a presentation, a report on the analysis of the data at the first session, which is with the working group, the full working group, then this sub-team will also have session 4 to begin the discussion, the development of the preliminary recommendations. So please do look for that email that came out a little bit ago today and let us know if you have any questions on it. And you will be getting both the draft summary report, summary table of all of the analysis, and that will reflect all the comments in the Google Docs. And also you will be seeing some draft slides for the presentation, both of those for you to review. Thank you, and let me just pause there. And I don't see any other hands up. I don't have anything else to add to that, Martin. Let me turn things back over to you.
Julie, I also don't have much to add, unless someone else wants to step up and comment. I know there's still some activity in the chat. We have just a very few minutes to turn the call. So unless anyone has anything else to add, Julie, you can wrap it up.
Thank you very much, Martin, and thank you, everyone, for joining today. We do appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing or hearing some of you in Kobe. And for those of you who are traveling, safe travels to all. Thank you. And this call is adjourned.